Blog Talk Radio.
Great song, Wagon Wheel. Yep.
Oh, I love that song. And I got a few notes in here. I met some of these guys. You remember Gabriel Iglesias? You know who he is?
Yeah, he's like a chubby little comedian.
Yeah, he's fluffy.
Yeah,
fluffy
he's pretty
guy.
Funny, yeah, yep.
But, you know, he follows me. So, and all these guys that I'm, you know, Dash Rucker's a big wrestling fan. Cash is a big wrestling fan. Bobby Bear, met him one time. You know, funny that a lot of entertainers follow us more than we follow them.
Yep.
So,
100%.
Anyway. All righty, give me a countdown, or you want me to do the countdown? Let's get started.
Yeah. Yep,
hey,
whenever
you're
ready.
Have you talked to Jack?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember when it was, but it was maybe a year ago, 2 years ago. It was definitely before he was in AEW. I know that.
Okay, have you talked to him today?
No. Nope.
Okay, you think his line's okay?
Should be.
All right. Get started. 3, 2. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Down. Break it. I told you that story I can't do Down and Dirty with Dutch anymore.
Yes.
I told you that. That's about the shit, but I didn't want to go hire a lawyer and all that shit. All right, we'll do it again. 3, 2. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the University of Dutch. My name is Dirty Dutch Mantel. It's what I've been known for most of my career. I'm joined today by my co-host, who does a great job, John Paz. John, how you doing?
Doing very good, Dirty Dutch. I cannot complain. In this crazy world, I cannot complain.
Oh, well, you know, this is like, I talked to you a little earlier today. This is like a week that not a lot is happening. And I am so sick, as everybody is, of this lockdown. It's just crazy. So we opened the show today with one of my favorite songs ever. And this is what wrestlers listen to going down the road. We listen to music like that, and, you know, we've been doing it for 40 years. I don't know what I guess they wear earphones now and listen to music. But we used to have 8-track players and, you know, the little mini 8s or what they got. And we just put our music on and let it play the whole way. But Darius Rucker is one of my favorite musicians, and I was glad to open the show with him today. You know, I met Darius Rucker. Actually met him a couple of times at a bar in Nashville. And you know what's surprising to me is he knew who I was. It's funny that a lot of musicians and even a lot of actors know who the wrestlers are and follow us. Where we think like, oh, they're on the big screen and they're on TV. Well, we're on TV too. But they're big fans of what we do and have respect for it. That's because an actor told me one time, he said, you know what I respect about you guys? Of course, I said, what? And he says, you know, when we do a scene in a movie, we might do it 10, 12, 15, 20 times to get it right. He said, you guys go out there and do it in one take, and you're done with it. You just keep going. He says, we can't do that because I don't think we're not physically talented enough to do that. And he said, that's why we hire stunt doubles and we do all that stuff. Because, you know, you can't pay a guy $10 million to do a movie and he's going to do his own stunts. Then he gets hurt. Then your $10 million or the investor's $10 million goes right down the drain. You know who else was a big, big wrestling fan? Johnny Cash.
Whoa. Wow.
I live most of my life in Nashville. And sometimes you'll be in a place, and they'll just walk through the door. It's like they're just like everybody else. And the people in Nashville kind of leave these people alone. Even the tourists, they won't go and bother them. They may ask for an autograph, you know, but they won't rush them because I think the police are kind of instructed in Nashville to kind of calm the tourists down a little bit, especially when these big stars walk down the street or walk into a bar or walk into a restaurant or something. But Johnny Cash, big fan. June Carter, his wife, was a big fan too. I went to a funeral one time in Hendersonville, Tennessee, and I'm and it was Jeff Jarrett's wife's funeral that I went to. And we went to, and not to bring everybody down, but they had a graveside service, and I swear, where I was standing, I looked down, and it was Johnny Cash and June Carter's gravesides, about 3 feet to my right. I went, boy, this is really a small world. It really is. So that's one of my little stories for today. But hey, we got a special guest today, folks. A man that I think is no stranger to anybody. And I'm going to ask him some questions today, and I know him really well. I used to manage him in WWE, and he went by the name of Jack Swagger. Of course, now, since he can't use that name in another company, he's Jake Hager, and he's one of the big studs of AEW. And I'm going to have him on a little bit later, and I'm going to ask him, and I told you this, John, I'm going to ask him some questions that I never asked him before during all that time I was with him. I never asked him some of these questions, and I always intended to, but never got around to it. So Jack's going to be with us a little bit later today, and I'm trying to read a note I got here. Oh, yeah, let me tell you who's another wrestling fan. Gabriel Iglesias.
Mm-hmm.
You know who he is, right?
Yep, oh, yeah.
He's a little, I guess, Hispanic or Latino comic, and he's a little fat guy. And he calls himself Fluffy Guy, I think, on Twitter. And he follows me, but a huge, huge fan. He actually private messaged me one day and just to say hello and said he was a big fan and, you know, he was following me and he enjoyed wrestling. But as far as I know, a lot of people are fans of what we do and you never know it until maybe the time you meet them or something like that. But anyway, let's move along. I got a bitch of the day. Because if wrestlers get into a car, which is what I kind of want this podcast to be, and we start talking, you won't go more than 2 minutes without a bitch. Because a wrestler is going to say, you know what I hate? I hate this. I hate that. This is a bunch of crap. But especially with this coronavirus lockdown. I mean, how long can it go on? I am so sick and tired of it. And really, I'm kind of concerned about the future. I really am. I'm reading a news headline today. And you ever read something, John, that says, blah, 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 and you say, what the fuck? I don't believe that shit. But it said
Fake news.
It said this, 120 million Indians in the country of India are unemployed. 120 million, not 120,000, not 1,200,000, it's 120 million Indians don't have a way to feed themselves. Now, what is that going to happen in another 6 months, 9 months, a year? It's not going to be good. It is, and I also read that right now 34 million Americans are out of work. I mean, that's hard to even grasp and get a hold
mm-hmm.
of that
yep.
many people out of work. So I'm telling you, folks, I don't want to bring us all down, but I hope this lockdown ends. And there was a statement made the other day by President Trump and a few other politicians, and I kind of got to agree with them as much as it's hard to accept. But you can't let the cure be worse than the disease, because when you're looking at people that can't feed themselves, can't pay the rent, can't pay their bills, the next thing you know, they're going to be on the street. And I don't know how much money this country has. I don't think the country has enough money to support every man, woman, and child in this country.
Right.
I mean, we got a lot of money. And this is another thing, and I'm going to get off my little dark side here. But all the money that the United States gives in foreign aid to these countries, that's going to have to stop too. Then what are those countries going to do? I mean, we've stepped into it here, folks. We really have. So, but let's get off that before I really pull out a baseball bat and hit myself in the head of it, in the head with it. Do you believe all the deaths from the virus that they're printing every day, and it's clickbait when you go on some website, so this and this, and sometimes you just got to click on it because it's almost screaming at you, click on me, click, I want you to read me. But all the deaths from the virus, you think all that's true, John?
No, definitely not.
You think it's enhanced upwards?
Oh, yeah.
Or
oh,
downwards,
yeah.
Or
no,
downwards?
Upwards enhanced. I think some of it is a bit of a work, to be honest.
Well, I do, too. So they're saying, as of today, now we're doing, folks, you won't get this to Friday or Saturday or this weekend, but we're doing this on a Tuesday night. And, oh, John, by the way, happy Cinco de Mayo Day.
Oh, yeah, you too. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
You didn't say a word to me about that, see. I thought you were just being, you're just being rude. But happy Cinco de Mayo, and to everybody out there, I hope you had a really good day. But these numbers they're putting out, I mean, it's just, it goes up in the United States. I know it goes up 3,000 a day. And they say, oh, it's going to double in a week. But they initially said that they gave some astronomical number that we would hit in February, March, and April. And it was like almost 200,000 deaths. And I said, I don't believe that can happen. I don't even think that's possible. Now, it may be possible over the course of a year. It may be that. But if you've read anything about this virus, it's mostly older people, I think, and I may be wrong on this. There's younger people that, you know, that die from it. But are they really dying from that, or are they dying from underlying health issues?
Yeah,
most of them are dying, I think, from pneumonia, and some of them having heart attacks. And it's probably the root cause is the virus, but they're not really dying from that. They're dying from they write it down to coronavirus. That's why those numbers are so exceedingly high to me.
Yep. Yep.
Now I'm getting off the subject now, and you got to keep me straight here, John. Uh-oh. I'm reading about people getting unemployment. You know, somebody that say they got a job and they're making, I don't know, $400 or $500 a week or whatever they're making. So they can go on unemployment, and I don't know, every state's different. I think it's anywhere from $250 a week to $275 a week. But they're getting the stimulus from the U.S. government at $600 a week. Am I right on that or not?
Yeah, because a friend of mine actually ends up making more money now, because if you do the unemployment plus the $600, than he would if he'd be working. So
yeah,
it's almost living the life.
Yeah, I know this girl, young lady, and she filed unemployment. She's getting $275 a week or something. And then they're piling on $600. She's making $875 a week to sit home. So this is like a bombshell to her. It's a bonanza to her. And they're talking about doing it again for next month and the next month. How much money does this country have?
Right. Yeah, it's crazy.
They give it away. And I read this too. They give it to them for them to pay their house note or to pay their rent. I guarantee you probably, I'll say 30 to 40% of those people didn't pay the rent with that. I think they went and bought food first. I think that's the first thing they did. And then the rest of it, I don't know. They may, if they perceive this is the end of times, they may just go spend it on liquor. I don't know. So this, I'm getting to my point now. So you let me get off the issue. Independent wrestlers can now draw unemployment. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, no.
Well, that's what I heard. If they can get it because they're like, they don't have that's not like a regular job, but they're contract workers, and they can file for it, and they can get unemployment. So, guys, if you're an independent wrestler out there and you're listening to this, hey, I'd go check that out, because you do work, you do pay taxes. That was one of my bitches of the week. Okay, I got that one in.
Yeah, what else do you want to bitch about?
Oh, Well, this is a question I get asked a lot. And I got this on email this week, but I've gotten this type of question before. How do you become a booker? So my question is, why would you want to even become a booker? That's the question I want to ask.
Right.
Because bookers, let me say this. Bookers get all the heat when nothing is going right, and they get none of the praise when it's selling out. Because when, say, WWE, when they were selling out with Rock and they were selling out with Stone Cold, it wasn't because the creative team was so brilliant. It was all because of Stone Cold and the Rock. But when it went down, oh, they're the stupidest idiots in the world. So they get none of the praise when it's doing well, and every bit of the blame when it's tanking. So, but how do you become a booker? Believe me, anybody can become a booker. Anybody. A 10-year-old kid can really become a booker. Doesn't mean that he knows what he's doing. But you can just go and get you a match and just figure it out in your head and tell the guys what you want and see if they do it. And then if the people pop at the end, well, you know you've done a pretty good job. But being a booker is not hard. It's being a successful booker is what's hard. It's almost like me asking somebody, well, I'd like to be an NFL football coach. How'd I do that? Of course, being an NFL football coach takes a lot more talent than actually being a wrestling booker, and because you have to actually have played the game. And have you ever heard that? Have you ever heard that? How can you be a booker if you've never played the game? You've heard that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You think there's truth to that or no?
Yes.
Well, I think there's truth to it, but
to a point.
But you don't have to be a great wrestler,
right? Right.
To be a great booker, you really don't. You got to kind of understand how to tell a story. Great bookers are great storytellers.
I feel like most of the good bookers, though, they've had training. You know what I mean? They've been trained in wrestling. They know the business. Not necessarily great wrestlers or anything, but they know the business and have had some training, for sure.
Well, but your greatest bookers were never, ever really your greatest wrestlers.
Right, yeah.
Because, and somebody asked me, well, how did you learn to do it? I learned to do it by watching great bookers at work. Because I said, it's almost like a minor league or a second string major league baseball player. He learned to manage a baseball team by sitting in the dugout and watching the manager or talking to the manager. And if he makes a move, like he takes a pitcher out and puts another pitcher in, well, why did you do that? And he gives you a reason. Why'd you put a left-hander in against the right-handed batter? I don't even know all how that works. But your greatest managers in baseball, they weren't your greatest players, but they became a serious student of the game and then adopted it when they got their chance. Because, of course, they did like anything else. They let it be known they would like to be a manager, and they got to work out in the league. And how many baseball teams are they really now? Major league teams, 30?
30, maybe? I think. Yep.
And that's kind of a closed community. So if you wanted to be a head coach at MLB level, then you only had to let like 30 people know or 30 organizations know, and you might have a job. You got to put yourself on the market before anything can happen. So anyway, that was one of those things I just wanted to bring up. So, fans, if you have a question for me, just send me an email, dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com, or go to my website, dirtydutchmantel.com, which I have a new story up this week. It'll be up tonight. And you can read all my past blogs. I got about 20 to go up, but I got about 5 or 6 of them up now. So I think it's good reading, and I enjoy doing it, and I enjoy talking to wrestling fans and seeing what questions they have for me. And see, I usually put notes down on my phone, John. Mm-hmm. Well, I actually wrote it down on some paper today. So, okay, listen, Mr. John, if you would, let's take a little break.
Okay.
Let's get our special guest on the phone, Mr. Jack Swagger. Let's serenade our way on out here with a little Darius Rucker. And when we come back, fans, you got about 30 seconds or so. Go get you a Coke, get you a cup of coffee, smoke a cigarette, which you shouldn't do, by the way, because that'll kill you. But I'll make a quick bathroom break, and we'll be right back with our special guest, Mr. Jack Swagger. Right.
Okay. Let's see if I have the right number. We, the people. Let's see if I have it. Jack Swagger, 561-451-7711.
I don't know. Let me see.
Oh, okay.
I got to look it up now. Damn it. Mr. Swagger. Well, I know I'll send him a text. Okay, I got him as Jack. Damn it. Info. Well, I'm going to have to go to my damn numbers. Stupid. Yeah, Jack's a good guy. Just just don't drive with him. Okay. How about I don't even have his number in here now? I called him yesterday, the day before. He just must be under Swagger. Maybe.
We.
Okay.
People.
561-451-7711. That's him.
Yes. All right. Let's get him on.
Now he was a world heavyweight champion in WWE, and he was the ECW champion.
Yes.
And he was a Lucha Underground champion.
World champion, yep.
Okay.
And the WWE United States champion.
And that's what we were going for when I got with him, about the United States championship, right?
Bill, weren't you going for the world title against Del Rio? Yeah, he had won the Elimination Chamber. And
yeah.
You were going after WrestleMania 29. You were fighting Del Rio for the world title, and you lose. And you end up feuding with Del Rio for a few months.
Yeah, that deal with Del Rio was pretty good. People kind of got interested in that.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
You know who we made mad? What was the Rodrigo? Rodriguez?
Vince? Vince McMahon.
Oh, he got mad at us.
Rodriguez, whatever his name is?
But he actually got mad. He thought we were really didn't like Latinos. Can you believe that?
That's crazy.
Yeah, he said, well, yeah, he thought we were just two racist summits in Texas, Oklahoma, I guess. I don't know. But he never said anything about it. But I heard through the grapevine that, that he, I think Del Rio told me, I think he said, he actually thinks you guys are like this. So, anyway. All right, let's get him on the phone there, and we'll start it up. He's going to do it on the phone. He wanted to do it. He said he was going to be driving first, but he's not. So he's at home tonight.
It's going right to voicemail for some reason.
Let me text him.
That son of a bitch. Hmm. Yeah, that's weird. Got right to voicemail.
Said he's ready.
Really? Why the hell does it keep going right to voicemail?
Does he have your number?
I don't know.
Give me your number real quick.
Yep, here he is.
You got him?
Hello.
Hey, Jack.
There he is.
Yeah, look at that. Speak of the devil. There he is.
I said, that damn Jack sitting over there probably drinking something. I said, fuck them bastards. I'm just going to leave them. I'm going to hang them up here. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Are we on right now?
We're not on right now. I'm going to introduce you. I'm going to give you a big, long-ass wind-up.
Listen,
and
you know my mental state right now. I need a lot of reaffirmation from you. Tell me how good I am.
Oh, well, I'll give it to you to an extent, but that's John's job. John, put
Hi,
him
John.
Over a little bit while I sit over here. So,
come on, undefeated yeah. MMA star, former world champion, one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, you are undefeated. You are undefeated. You just have that one blemish, that no contest on your record. And that guy, what a cheating bastard.
What a cheating bastard. We could talk about that if you guys want to.
Yeah, he lowered his balls for your knee. You know, he saw the knee coming, he just lowered down into it. I saw what that son just did. All right,
well, you do have an expert eye, so.
I did see that. You ready, Jack?
Yes, sir.
Let's get started here. You ready?
So this is my speakerphone. Is this good audio for you guys?
Yeah, perfect.
All right.
Hey, John, did you ever find out why we couldn't get our volume levels synced up?
I don't know. It was weird. With Ricky Morton, it was a little off, but with Husny, it was a lot better. So, and I didn't do anything different. So I don't know what the hell it was.
I think with Ricky lives off in the goddamn hills.
That could be it.
He lives out in the fucking hills got eyes. So, hell, I don't think they can even call on a landmine from one side of the mountain to the next. That's how screwed up it is up there. Okay, I'm ready when you guys are. So, you ready?
Yes.
Let's go. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back, everybody, to the University of Dutch. And as I promised, right before we broke away, I was going to go away for a second for you to go get a drink or whatever. And we were going to come back and we were going to introduce our special guest, my good friend and confidant that I've known for quite some time now, Mr. Jack Swagger. Jack, how you doing?
Hello, Dutch. How you doing, my friend?
Well, I'm doing fine. So, hey, I'm going to ask you some questions today that I don't even think, and I won't ask them right now. I don't even think I asked you when we were together. But I've always, and I remember every week or so I said, I need to ask him that question, but I never really got around to it. So today I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. So
I'm a little bit nervous.
Don't be. I won't let your secrets out. I will not do that because I promise. Anyway, hey, listen, so for the people that are unaware, to Oklahoma, right?
Yes.
And we won't hold that against you. But I was reading up on you today, and you started actually amateur wrestling or getting into wrestling when you were like 5 or 6.
Really young. I caught the bug. I idolized my cousin, who was much older than me, and he was like just incredible high school wrestler. Like I'm talking every year, ASICS, you know, the brand. They make a dream team of wrestlers of every way in high school across the nation, and my cousin made that list. So at 5 years old, he's much older than me, I caught the bug and loved it ever since.
Wow. So and when did you start amateur wrestling? About that time, or 7 or 8?
About that time, but we moved to Perry. I was actually born in Fargo, North Dakota, so I guess I'm a product of North Dakota, but also of Oklahoma. We moved to Perry when I was 4, so I started wrestling when I was 5. You do that. It's very common there in Perry. We went to the YMCA, and I had ex-All-American from Oklahoma giving free wrestling classes at the YMCA. So it was, like, idiotic not to get in that.
In Perry, Oklahoma?
In Perry, Oklahoma. Perry with a Y, Dutch.
Yeah, remember the first time you told me that, Perry, and I went, wait a minute, Perry, Oklahoma, that sounds vaguely familiar. And you told me that's where they caught the Oklahoma City Bomber.
Yeah.
They caught him in Perry, right, outside your hometown on the interstate or something?
Oof. I was in sixth grade when it happened, to give you a little reference. And he got pulled over by Charlie Hanger, a resident of Perry. I know his name. Everybody in Perry knows this. He's a state trooper for Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he lived in Perry. And he walked up on him for speeding. So he pulled him over. And he had a pistol showing in the back seat. And so it didn't even get to, you know, let me get your license. He immediately, guns drawn, brought him to the courthouse. And then in Perry, it's a very old town.
Yeah.
And so we still have, like, the square with the courthouse in the middle with, like, a courtyard around it. We would do, like, Easter egg hunts on Easter. And then all around the square are, like, little strip malls of businesses, you know, like, downtown. And so when he brought him to that courthouse, I remember driving by because I had a baseball game. My mom came and pulled me out of school as soon as she heard the news that they caught him. She didn't know what was going on, so she came and got me and my sister out of school. We lived a block and a half away. And,
wow.
But the courthouse was mobbed. I've never seen that many people in Perry, Oklahoma at a time. Just news vans everywhere, all over the place.
Well, when you said Perry, I thought something had happened there because – and then you reminded me, and then – you know, my memory was refreshed. So let's get off that bad subject. So in your youth, I mean, where was Danny Hodge in all this?
So, like I said, I lived two blocks away from the, from the school. Danny lived one block away from the school. So
really?
he was my neighbor, and his grandson, one of his grandsons, graduated with me with high school. His name is Patrick Hodge, a very good friend of mine to this day. And kind of growing up younger, you know, I knew of the legend, but I didn't know that Danny Hodge was living a block away from me. You know, this is like 7, 8, and I knew of the name, but didn't really understand how close he was to me.
But Danny Hodge was an All-American at Oklahoma, correct?
He was a 3-time All-American, silver medal in the Olympics, only wrestler to ever be on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
You told me that, but I didn't realize it. I know it now.
I mean, I could sit here and talk about his stuff. Like, he never got taken down in college. So at a Division I level in the 1950s, in 1952 is when he graduated Perry High School. He went to Division I school and never got taken down in wrestling. Usually a common amateur wrestling match, there's 4 to 5 takedowns at least on average a match. And
he never got taken down.
Never did.
Wow. Unbelievable. Now you received a football scholarship and a wrestling scholarship to the University of Oklahoma, right?
Yes.
At the same time?
In 2001. Well, technically not at the same time. The wrestling scholarship came after their heavyweight was academically ineligible. This is after my redshirt season with the Sooners. This was in 2002, and then they offered me. So I was already at the school for a year, and then – the wrestling team got in trouble. They didn't have any backups. They didn't have anyone to wrestle heavyweight. So they came across the campus of Oklahoma and they found the toughest son of a bitch they could.
Let me ask you, in playing football, were you an offensive player or a defensive player, or did you play both ways?
I'm such a defensive player that I despise offensive players, Dutch.
I see. You don't know this, but – you know, Jack holds the Oklahoma high school record on blocked extra points. Did you know that?
Oh, I didn't know that, no.
How many? I think 7 or 8, right, Jack, you said?
Yeah, in one season. Yeah.
Because Jack's 6'7". He's 6'7", and he didn't have to jump high. I mean, a lot of those, you know, high school guys, they kick kind of low anyway. I'm not saying you blocked it because of that, but you timed it right, and he set a record. You can look it up, bro. And he just go to Oklahoma High School Records, and he's in there. Anyway, Jack, how did you meet Jerry Briscoe?
Oh, Jerry, very good friend of mine. He was kind of following me, unbeknownst to me throughout my high school career and throughout my college career. I met him like my second or third year at Oklahoma. I went and had a dinner with Jerry and then Jim Ross. And, you know, it was me and a big group of people. And we got to know each other. And they always said it from the beginning, if you want a shot at this, finish your school and then give us a call.
Mine was great. So JR kind of and Jerry both kind of paved the way for your entry into WWE.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And when they started you, and you told me this story just for the fans at home, didn't you study finance in school?
I have a bachelor's in finance, and then I got halfway through my master's program while I was at WWE. So halfway to go to get my MBA.
So now the story you told me refreshed me. You had a job offer to start, I think, in Dallas, Texas, at a firm in Dallas. And then they offered you the shot at WWE, and you took the WWE gig?
Yep. So in 2006, January, I'm about to graduate in May. So in January, I'm interviewing, and I interviewed for months and months. Such. It was nerve-wracking. I ended up taking a position with a finance company in Dallas, and I was supposed to start on June 1st. Unbeknownst to the finance company, I took a tryout to Atlanta, Georgia to see Bill DeMott at Deep South in McDonough, and that was the week before. And so I went through a week tryout, and it really felt natural. And on Saturday, Jerry called me, told me I got the job with them, and it was a much more lucrative opportunity for a young entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm even saying that, but it was a great opportunity for me. It changed my life. And so Monday morning, I was supposed to be in Dallas at 8 a.m. I waited till 8:15, and I called them, and I said I wasn't coming in.
So you told them 15 minutes after you were supposed to be there that you wasn't coming.
Yeah, so
that sounds like a very wrestler-ish thing to do.
Well, the way I looked at it is like this was a risk to take, so I needed to put some pressure on myself, and so I needed to know that I couldn't go back to that job. So I know I needed to burn that bridge.
Well,
even though
I think you made the right decision. Okay, so you go to WWE and you spend a couple of years in Atlanta. What do they call that, Deep South, or what do they call that?
Yep, Deep South.
And then you went to, it was in Tampa here, the school here was in Tampa, right? NXT,
yeah.
Kind of in Tampa. What was it called? What was that
called? FCW, Florida Championship Wrestling.
Yeah.
So I was at Deep South for 6 months, and then I was at OVW for 6 months in Louisville, or Louisville, as you're supposed to say it. And then in January of 2007, I was moving to Tampa, and FCW was in a Publix warehouse. It was stacks and stacks of canned vegetables beside us, next to rat traps, next to box fans, and there was three rings set up in a corner with the big cargo door open, and Dr. Tom sweating like an animal, and Dr. Tom was doing hour-long matches with Heath Slater to help us get ready for this. And to this day, that's why I love Dr. Tom.
So no air conditioning in that building?
No air conditioning at the time. They turned FCW into like a minor league performance center. And it was very nice. If you watch the television from it, the studio looked nice, and the training facility ended up being a lot better and air conditioning. But that was a year later before any of that happened, and so we all learned in the Florida heat with no air conditioning and rat traps.
Wow. So let's go ahead to 2013 when you met me. Now, this is a question I don't think I asked you the whole time we were together. We were in Nashville. I remember that where I started with WWE. Did you know that I was coming, or did you know anything about me?
So, to be honest, and to all the listeners out there, it's always better to admit when you don't know something, and I did not. I had heard of your name. I did not know of your extensive background or what a genius you were, you know. What a story. Don't read a book by the cover. You're going to expose me. I'm going to have to tell this story about how you came in and you were auditioning and you had mustard on your sweatshirt.
I sure did. I was having a really, really rough time at the time. But I told the story. They called me at home and asked me what I was going to be doing Monday. And I said, well, they wanted to talk to me, and I didn't know what they wanted to talk to me about. I went down there, and John, you haven't heard this story, but I thought they wanted to talk to me about the performance center. I thought they wanted me to be like an instructor or something there. And then I go down there and I meet Triple H, and he tells me, well, we're looking for somebody to put the swagger that can kind of talk a little bit. And they told me the gimmick. They wanted an older guy. That was me. And they wanted a guy that had been around with some experience and who felt that the country has seen its better days,
mm-hmm.
which I kind of believe that. So when he says, hey, I want you to do an audition for Vince, and I went in there and I said, what do you want me to say? They said, hey, it's up to you. See, when you audition for something, they leave it up to you, but after you get there, then they write everything down for you. So I went in there, and I've told this story, and I've told you this, Jack. I based the character on Gran Torino, which is Clint Eastwood.
That movie.
When he was an older guy and he'd give up on America and all the in Detroit, they tore all the damn auto factories down, and you know, a bunch of immigrants were living all around him, and he'd kind of give up. So I went in there and I had about 5 minutes, and I based the Zeb Coulter character off Clint Eastwood in that movie. And I remember what I said. I said, I walked down the street in my hometown and country, what happened to my America? And they liked that, and they said, keep it going. And on the last one, I think I put my hand over my heart for whatever reason, and I said, we the people. And they took it into Vince. And what is natural coming out of Vince's mouth was, you're fired. But this time he says, you're hired. I mean, I wasn't in there when he did this. So this is a story I tell. I go down there at 3:30. I meet Triple H at 4:30. I do the audition at 5:30. Vince sees the audition, and I get hired at 6:30, and I was live on Raw with Jack at 7:30 that night. It's a crazy story, isn't it, Jack?
It's incredible. And so, I can still remember the moment when you first said, we the people. There must have been 7 or 8 people in the room, and all of us just kind of like looked at each other because it was like instant goosebumps. Like it was just like, oh, that's it. Now we see it. And it was a very cool moment for me. I remember it vividly.
Well, I do too. Listen, let me ask you this, Jack. I do remember that 75% of that dressing room, or maybe 80%, they didn't have a clue who I was. Did anybody ask you, who's that guy?
Honestly, I feel like it was less than that. I feel like a lot of them were big wrestling fans and understood who you were, maybe 50%. No one really ever came up to me and said that. I think they were either knew or they were too embarrassed to say that they didn't know.
Well, I will say this, Jack. I've never managed a lot of guys. I've managed a few, but not for long term. But you would go out there every night and you'd have matches, and you would amaze me because you're big anyway. But some of the things you could do, and I would watch your matches, and we'd go back. And this is the way I would do with Jack, John. I wouldn't go and say, do this, do this, do this, do this. I would just make suggestions. You might want to think about this. You might want to think about that. And, you know, and Jack used some of them and some of them he didn't. But what he ended up being was really a really, really great ring tactician. He could really go in the ring. And you had some great, great matches with Del Rio.
I really appreciate that.
When, and I tell this story, too. When we went to WrestleMania 29 in New Jersey, and we went out, and we cut the only promo, the only live promo on that show, and I guess 82,000 people or whatever. And Donald Trump, he was in the building. And I didn't even he had just been inducted into the Hall of Fame, and I didn't know he was there that night. And I told you this, Jack, remember, after your match, and I say, and we lost again for the 10,000th time. So, and I'm sitting there, and Donald Trump walks in with his two sons and his daughter, Ivanka. And but they keep going down like the hallway. And then I'm talking to Damian Sandow. I told you this, Jack. I feel a peck on my shoulder, John. And I look up, and it's Donald Trump, and he's looking down at me. And he says, "Heard your promo. Tremendous, tremendous, excellent, excellent." And he shook my hand, and he walked off. You know, he says everything twice. But little did I know that when he walked off, he took our gimmick with him. Because all MAGA was, Make America Great Again, was damn We the People on steroids. But he really, really enjoyed the promo, and was actually, thinking back on it now, was actually a very good compliment. And you had a great match that night, Jay, a great match. I was thinking about some of the trips we made. You remember that South African trip we made?
Of course. How could I forget?
Oh, God, 18 hours, John.
Oof.
You know, it was so long. I don't think it was straight through on the way down. It was straight through on the way back, I think. 18 hours or 17 and a half hours. It is so long, you can get drunk twice and sober up before you land. That's how long that flight is. Now, John, you've interviewed Jack before on your show, right?
Yep. Oh yeah.
Okay. So I'm gonna let John give you a few questions. But let me ask you now, Jack. I want to congratulate you on your MMA career. You're 2-0-1. Is that what it is? You got one disqualification.
Listen, fuck it. Let's just call it 3-0.
Well, you are 3-0 because you beat the crap out of that guy. So, but now, when's your next? Do you have another MMA fight scheduled?
So, right as this whole situation was coming about, I was just signing the bout agreement for May 9th with Bellator.
Yeah.
It was going to be in San Jose. As of now, I'm just guessing that it's going to be late August, but I was going to fight May 9th.
Well, good luck on that, and good luck on us getting out of this lockdown, because this is driving me insane. Now, let's talk about
what thank God for President Trump.
let's talk about your AEW career right now. How did that come about? Who did you get an initial call from?
It really was incredible. Chris Jericho really gave me the call, really gave me the okay with everybody there, and really got me the job with AEW. He was training at Dave Bautista's gym, the same one I train at here in Tampa, and my head coach was training him at the time, and so we would bump into each other all the time, and, you know, he would kind of see the progression between the fights, and, you know, must have liked what he was seeing, and he gave old TK, like, this is my guy, I want him. And that's
well,
pretty
good.
Awesome.
So very, very difficult. I'm sure
yes,
you found
is.
Out. I was telling somebody, I said, hey, I wrestled in front of no fans before. We tried to sell tickets. But nobody bought any. I have wrestled in front of 8 people before. So it's almost like an empty building. But seriously, in front of and no fans, it's incredibly difficult. Yes?
Yes, very different. And much, much more difficult. Just the feeling you get. I think it's really cool that this really highlights how important the fans are to the pro wrestling show, and really proves that they are a part of it.
No, it's, without the fans, I don't know what you know, the feeling is not there.
Yeah.
It's just not there. I don't care what you got. I was even watching John Oliver, that I'm kind of a fan of his, but he doesn't have a live audience. Well, I watch him because he just owns sometimes. But he's not too bad when he's got a crowd. But without a crowd, he bombs flatter than damn pancakes.
Mm.
He's just horrible. He's not even funny.
No.
So listen, let me ask you, what is the timeline? Well, you wouldn't know. But when do you think AEW could start back up, even if they lifted the lockdown, you say, at the end of May? When do you think AEW could start touring again?
Well, starting live shows on May 7th. No, May 6th. Excuse me. We're starting live shows on May 6th. May 6th. Easy for me to say.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, I don't see any reason why we can't start up right away. But
now, you say live shows May 6th. But without fans, it's just a live show.
Without
right?
fans, yes.
Because what you've been doing is all been in the can, correct?
Film live to television. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the other stuff has been in the can, which has been great and really showing, like, you know, how much we love our fans. Because it is very hard to go out there and put on a tough match without them there. We need them. So,
no kidding. No kidding.
My MMA agent does not think you'll see any live audiences sports events until 2021. That's what he thinks. I find that preposterous, but he might know something that I don't. So it's a very weird situation. And your extensive knowledge and wisdom throughout your life, have you ever been a part of something like this?
Nope.
No.
Never have. I've been a part of it, but it wasn't supposed to be a part of it. Like I said, I've wrestled in front of no people, but not because the people couldn't get there. They just didn't come. But here you're mandated to not to have any fans at all. And
Dutch, I didn't know you wrestled at Impact.
Do what now? Oh, yeah. Well,
anyway.
we had a few fans. Hey, we went to – I tell the story. We went to somewhere in Idaho one time. A 12,000 seat arena. I swear to God, you could have shot a shotgun off in the place, and not hit anybody. I mean, and I took a picture of it. It's like a panoramic view. It's like you could actually count the people. It's like 275 people, and just, but it was like a 12,000 seat building. It was, I don't even know why we went there. I call TNA sometimes the gang that couldn't shoot straight. I mean, they were good people, but you know, they just sometimes their promotional skills were suspect.
Anyway.
To say the least. So, you got any Japan trips? Did you have any Japan trips lined up?
No, I only had I only went to Japan with WWE. I didn't have anything outside of them, any independent. They weren't very interested in a real fighter for some reason.
Well, let me ask you this now. This is one of the things when I was with you that I felt most disappointed over. It's when they put you guys together, you and Cesaro. And I think you guys, to me, generated more interest in that ring than anybody they had there. And how long were you guys teamed up? 2 months, maybe 3 months, more?
I think I came back because I remember I severed my thumb. I severed the ligament in my thumb in the Extreme Rules pay-per-view with Del Rio. And so I was out for like 2 months. So I came back at the end of summer, and that was 13. And then we had the WrestleMania in 14. So it was like 8 months, 9 months.
Maybe. It didn't seem like that long.
But it wasn't just me and Cesaro. And this is what I tell everybody. It was a group. It was you, me, and Cesaro. And
yep.
that dynamic was something special that came together, and it was believable. And when you take one piece away from it, who knows how the whole dynamic is going to change.
I tell this story, Jack. WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans, we were in like the first – we were like in the dark match, I guess. But we went – it was four teams, right? It was you and Cesaro, the Usos,
yep.
And two more teams. I don't know.
It was Henning. It was Henning and Ryback.
Yep.
And then
the Colognes.
Yeah, that's right. And the crowd was
the
hot.
Easily forgettable Colognes.
But I remember one team went out and the crowd was hot, and they were hot for you guys. And then I don't know. I think you guys got eliminated next. And remember when we were walking up the ramp, that how quiet that crowd got? And I looked at Jack and Cesaro, and I said, guys, do you hear that? And they looked at me like, hear what? I said, exactly. Because I said, what we just did, we took the air out of this room. Because they wanted you guys to win.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
When you guys didn't win, well, what's the purpose? Let's start the regular show. It's funny when you do that because they got a certain expectation about the match. And when you take that expectation away, yeah, you kind of screw yourself up. So,
great point. I'm glad you brought that up. So maybe because we were doing something against their narrative, they broke us up. That just kind of turned on a light bulb for me.
Yeah, that's right. The next day they did do that. But you know what they did, John, is they broke them up, but they didn't tell me. All of a sudden I went out and we did something, and then Cesaro shows up with Paul Heyman. You remember that, Jack?
Yeah.
Did they tell you? They didn't tell me.
No.
They
treat me like mushrooms, fed me shit, kept me in the dark.
This is another thing, and I don't think a lot of people know this story. We were on TV, I don't know where it was. It was a Raw, and all of a sudden, I think you were against the Usos, I think, or somebody. They changed the finish right in the middle of the
match. It was against the Colognes on a pay-per-view in Miami, and they changed the finish.
You ever heard that, John?
Yes, from you, actually, yeah.
Oh, I told you that story. All of a sudden, the match is going, and all of a sudden, they have a finish. And I went, what the fuck happened? As Jack said, hey, they changed the finish right in the middle of the match. I said, they own the company.
I have a theory about that.
Give it to us.
I accidentally wore I wore a lot of black singlets, but they were like each one was different, like pattern. And so that night I had packed the wrong knee pad cover to match my singlet. And so it didn't match. So I think the old man saw that and he's like, he can't win.
John, do you have any questions for Mr. Jack here?
Yeah, when they paired you and Dutch together, did you think you needed a manager at that point? And were you like very welcoming of Dutch?
I'm always very welcoming. Like, that's one thing I've learned is, like, Jake, shut up and learn and don't speak so much. But at first, I'll be honest, I was like, I was very eager to prove fans that I could speak and that I could be an entertaining character. So if you look at our promos in the beginning of us, like the first, like, couple weeks, I was trying to like cut as much of a promo as Dutch was because I saw this as my opportunity. Like, hey, they say I can't talk, so let me do this. But I was battling, you know, I didn't need to. And that was something that I learned along the way, that this man is great and he really has this character. And there was something special about Dutch that like he could say very awful things and they would still applaud him every night. There were so many times that we came back to the curtain and we would say, Dutch, you said this, and they still cheered you. And it was just like an incredible anomaly. And so the first couple of weeks after I saw that, it was very cool to be a part of, and I'll put it up there with anything I've done in my career.
Well, they told me, some of the writers, people are going to hate you guys. I said, okay. Sometimes you just got to go along with what they say. Because there is a thing of knowing more than they know, but you can't tell them that. But I knew that from that first interview in Nashville, they're not going to hate this thing because half of them agree with it.
Yeah.
It's hard to get half of them to hate you and the other half to agree with you. You know, so, but they kept saying, oh, well, you're, they didn't understand it, but I did. But I didn't really throw it out there for them to think about it because we were getting over, and I don't care if you get over on the bad side, you get over on the good side. The thing is, you're getting over. You're making a an impact. And I remember the deal we did, but what's that guy's name, Beck? What's his first name?
Glenn Beck.
Oh, Glenn Beck pitched the fit, put us on his show. And this is what WWE really kind of really liked, because we got a ton of publicity. Because, you know, the John Oliver I'm telling you about, he had us on his show where he mentioned us. He had Mick Foley on that night, I remember that. And he was talking about us. And then he says, well, Dutch, I know, he said, well, Zeb, if that is your real name. Actually, he stole that from me because Mick told me he gave it to him. We were on CNN. They were talking about us. And me and Jack even did a special interview, actually challenging Beck to come and see us at Raw. So we got a lot of publicity out of that, and a lot of it was worth the effort just to get that. So.
And after that first night, we came back through the curtain, and they kind of patted us on the back. But, like, I remember you and I talking, and I remember you telling me, like, you're like, Jack, they don't know how big this thing is about to be. And I really don't think they did, and it blew up.
Well, I could feel it out there because, you know, if you've been around as many crowds as I have, you can feel the heartbeat. So you're standing around and you touch a certain – it's like a comedian. He goes out there and he tests this crowd. What are they going to respond to? So when I would hit something, you could almost feel it in the air. And I was about a minute into that interview, and I felt them start to rumble. And here they got. And I said, that's where we got them. And we got them the first night and got them hard. And
I just got goosebumps.
I remember, and we would go to Europe, John. And I would go out there and I would say, I want every real American in this building. And they'd be like Germans. They all stand up. Put your hand over your heart, and then a loud voice, say along with us, we, the people, they'd all say that. I think one night in Manchester, and it was a hell of a house. I don't know how big that building is, but it was jammed. And I says, I want every real Englishman in this building. Well, they like that. And stand up, put your hand over your heart, and I say, stay along with us. God save the Queen, and the roof come off. So
well,
they kind of felt it.
And then to really highlight how big it became and how much people loved it, 3 years later, you know, 2019, I haven't been on TV. Dutch hasn't been on TV for 3 years saying we the people. And I come out, debut for AEW, and the whole crowd, all 14,000 people on the DC thing, they just start chanting we the people. Now, that was supposedly that was bad creative.
Yeah, bad creative, yeah. But,
bad creative that struck the soul of a nation, but.
Jack, listen, I'm going to let you run. Congratulations on your AEW run, and I think it will lead you to a lot of places. I think you'll find a lot of success. If you go back to MMA, you'll find a lot of success. So the future looks bright for you. I couldn't be happier for you. John, you got another question for Jack before we let him go?
Yeah, I was just curious about kind of his current state of AEW and what's going on. I mean, he just obviously wrestled Moxley in the empty arena match, great match called by good old JR. But what's the the next step? I know you got the bubbly bunch going on and everything else in AEW. What's kind of the next step for Jake Hager in AEW?
Yeah, it's thank you for saying it was a great match. I'm very proud of that match that I had with Mox, even though I lost and I got locked out of the house temporarily. That match is easily one of my favorites in my career. I think right now, pro wrestling, doing live shows, has a little bit of upper hand on the fans because you really don't know what to expect. So that gives us a lot more freedom. And you see that in the bubbly bunch and stuff like that. So it's going to be a fun time right now to be creative and really, you know, find new avenues to do what we do without doing what we do, so to speak.
Well, congratulations on your AEW run and your MMA run. Proud for you. So, Jack, I'm going to let you go. But before I let you go, let's say this one more time. I want every real American in this building. and within the sound of my voice to please rise. Put your hand over your heart and say along with us, We the people.
We the people. Dang
it. Got it in. Well, we do it again. I want every real American to put your hand over your heart and say along with us, We the people. Boy, I tell you, we stay in contact with me, and we'll let you go. Great talking to you. And so, fans, we'll be back next week with another episode of the University of Dutch. See you then.
Dutch, John, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Very good.
Awesome stuff.
You know how long that was? An hour and 8 minutes.
Wow.
We probably went 40 minutes or 45 with Jack, didn't we, John?
Yes. Yep, 40.
Actually, minutes?
A little bit over 40, yep.
That's good. So
man, that was a lot of fun, Dutch. Thank you.
Well,
I could definitely tell that you read about me, so that made me smile.
Well, I said, you know, I might need – hey, listen, I've been in this business so fucking long. I just hear shit. I don't ever read shit on anybody. I said, you know, I might need to, like, read up on you.